Court's going to call 13-23-00412-CB. Auto Mechanic Service Plus LLC and Mohammed Al Barnawi individually versus G. Michael, is it Dragos? Dragos?
Good morning, Justices. Thank you for your time this morning. My name is Diamond DeLeon. I'm representing Mohammed Al Barnawi in this appeal. In a nutshell, I just want to walk y'all through this morning. We've got a breach of contract and DTPA claim. We're back in October of 2022. There was an original order that was signed about 7 months passed through. And in May, there was a second order signed, virtually identical to the order in October. In my brief, I call the first order the original order, the order from May, the amended order. And then subsequently from that, we have a third order from August 2023, which I call the reformed order. In a nutshell, Justices, this case is a case of finality. That will be the task we're being put through today, trying to go through all of this. What I like most about this type of case, I'll get right to it, is it's jurisdictional, so it's de novo. Most of the appeals that I have done are criminal appeals, and those usually are in the light most favorable to the trial court most of the time, which always makes it against the grain. But I'm thankful for this standard because it gives us a little bit of frame of light. The reason I say that is because when you look at these three orders, you're going to see that there's a whole lot of gaps that need to be filled in. And I think that the de novo standard is appropriate because we aren't just filling in the gaps for the trial court at this point. Basically, there were some damages awarded in the October 22 order, about $1,300. Mr. Barnawi was ordered to pay in October 21st, 2022, in the original order. Sua sponte, there is a second order, the amended order, May 8th, 2023, that was signed. It's identical.
And it's identical except for the fact that they removed partial.
Correct. That's the only difference. The first order for May says plaintiff's partial summary judgment. And then the judgment from May, the amended order, says the exact same thing, minus partial summary judgment, which is important because to me, from what I can see through the record, it looks like the judge is going back and just pulling out, cutting out something that shouldn't have been there. And the reason I say that,
And Mr. DeLeon, because you mentioned the record, one of the things I don't see before is the reporter's record from the bench trial. It appears from the docketing statement that you filed for your client that it was requested, but I didn't see it before the court.
That's correct, Judge. I don't have access. I don't see the reporter's record either. So what I'm working on is strictly from the clerk's record, which contains the register of actions, as well as the pleadings and judgments. So, for example, in the orders, specifically in the reformed order, you'll see that trials had on October 18th, 2022. So that's what I use for my frame of reference point for that. When we're looking at this to see what supports either side, we can look at the pleadings. Actually, that's a great point because the pleadings I think are indicative. Besides the two first orders, we look at the reformed order from August 19th, 2023. Now that order is substantially different from the first two prior. It includes almost double the damages and increased attorney's fees, interest, all sorts of things. That one is substantially different. Now, the motion on which that is based was the motion to reform judgment filed after the second order, the amended order. So my position on this is that the trial court judge amended their error, their clerical error. And after that clerical error was amended, just taking off the partial summary judgment, the plaintiffs filed a motion to reform within 30 days of that. Essentially, the second order revived the 30-day period under Rule 329 to file a motion to modify, motion to reform, motion to renew trial. And so that's my argument in a nutshell.
Well, let me ask.
Yes, sir.
Don't you think that the reporter's record would have assisted this court in some way as far as giving us clarity when the bench trial was completed as to what the intent of the judge would have been at that point?
I think the reporter's record would definitely have shed some light, Judge, Justice, excuse me. I think the reporter's record would have definitely shed some light. It could have maybe provided something in there that would have said, we're coming back, or that's it. But we just...
Is there a reason why you didn't request it?
I thought it was requested, Judge, if I wasn't mistaken. If it wasn't, I do know that this case at some point had been on abatement due to my client's bankruptcy that was pending. And I do know there was a pause in there. If it wasn't requested, it was probably because of the automatic stay, just trying to keep the proceedings at a standstill. But we don't have.
But isn't that on you to bring that to the board?
Yes, Judge. I could have. I suppose I could have filed and asked the court to abate this, the proceedings, and supplement the reporter's records. I wasn't. I've never abated. I had a case abated two times and sent the same hearing, once for the bankruptcy and once for the record. So I was a little bit hesitant on that. I wasn't sure if that was something that could maybe, if this tribunal could do that after today or even midway during today, if that could be something that's abated and requested from the reporter to supplement before the ruling is made. That's
well, I think the reporter's record would have been useful for you in the briefing. That shit may have sailed, so you could continue.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I agree. I think the reporter's record would have helped either way, Judge. But what we're looking at here, I try to keep this as tight as possible with what we've got. And what I'm looking at is the way I look at this, and from my position on my appeal, is the timetables, the time frames, really. It's kind of a numbers game for the finality process from what I'm looking at. And I see that the October 24th, 2022 original order. So 30 days from that would have been November 21st, 2022 to modify, reform, or have a new trial on that. But we don't have that filed until after the May 8th order, over 7-8 months down the road. So under Rule 329, that ship has sailed, so to speak, to modify or reform the order. Now, when we're looking at this, we know that in my brief, I kind of go through this. I break it down to clerical error and judicial error. The clerical error, we can see through the case law that you can amend, excuse me, you could amend at any time for clerical error through a non-pro-tunc or something that's clerical. And that the clerical errors are made on the entry of the judgment. So in this case, my position is that the partial summary judgment was a clerical error. It was made on the entry of the judgment, probably copy and paste, which I know in my practice, I do a lot of copy and pasting. So they just cut that out.
How would that, the initial judgment, how would it have been resurrected by the trial court just to solve that clerical error? What would have prompted, if it was a final judgment already signed, the case would have been closed. Then was it 9 months later?
I think at least 7 months. Judge.
7 months later. Yeah. Sua sponte, the judge signs a new order with that partial summary judgment portion out. But what on earth could have resurrected that order to or brought it to the judge's attention?
That would be just pure speculation on my part, Your Honor, and I don't want to speculate. It could have been numerous things. It could have been sitting on the desk, could have been passing, walking by, could have been through conversation in the office or through outside communication. It could have been anything. I don't have the answer for you, and I wish I did. I do know that at one point when this case was on abatement, this tribunal asked the trial court a specific question to answer. Was the August 19th order final? And the trial court replied, yes, like that was intended to be final. That was somewhat helpful to the degree of finality. I would have, I think it might have helped if we could have asked a question. Maybe it was too on points, but did the October 21st, 2022 order, was that intended to be final? If she had answered, if the trial court had answered that, I think maybe it would have, maybe wouldn't have been here. I think that would have been a great answer to know, but that's what we're here to find out. And the cases that I've provided in here in my brief, everything seems to direct that the finality doesn't need Mother Hubbard, doesn't need any magic words. That's what all the cases seem to say. So just because the orders don't say this is a final order doesn't mean they're not final. So the first, I think actually all three of these orders, the original, the amended, and the reformed order, I don't think any of them say this is the final order, technically. So there's no magic words that will being this is the final order or that is the final order. But what the case law seems to direct us to are all of the pleadings. In the plaintiff's motion for to reform judgment, they acknowledge that trial was held in October. Their pleadings themselves acknowledge that they weren't awarded enough damages. And from what it looks like, as I'm looking at the paperwork, is it looks like they're unsatisfied with the amount awarded. So it seems like an attempt to appeal the judgment from October, having been revived by the amended order. And it's really great timing, but I just think it's improper. I think it modifies too far. It goes beyond clerical error of taking out the partial summary judgment. It almost doubles the money and adds all this extra stuff on there.
And was there a hearing held on the motion to reform the judgment?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And we don't have the record from that one either.
No, sir. No, sir. But the original order from October and the second order from May, they both they're the exact same thing minus that one part. So to me it seems I have questions as well. Like was it a duplicate? Basically, was it just a clerical error? There's lots of questions, but unfortunately we're left to answer those at this point. And we're looking at the pleadings here, and their pleadings say that this was tried in October. The pleadings call it even itself, this is a post-judgment motion, the motion to reform. It's post-judgment. That acknowledges that the case was tried and finalized. And the reason this is important is I think it appears that the trial court was correcting a clerical error, but because of the motion to reform and a subsequent order that was filed, it resulted in judicial error, because the judicial error, as it breaks down, happens on the rendering of the judgment, not just the entry. So an entry is like you write it down, you write something wrong, you copy and paste something wrong. The rendering is when you speak it, or when you sign that dotted line. And that's what happens on the August 19th order. The reformed order is, as soon as that order went into play, it vacated the prior order and voided it, which is too far beyond. It's too far beyond the October 21st, 2022 ruling. And the case law is well settled that there's no power to change anything after 30 days. That's straight from Rule 329. And that's the crux of this argument. It's just the time frame. 7+ months have gone by. It was amended 7 months down the road, and then reformed months after that, completely changing what was originally ordered to what finally became ordered. So we're here asking the court to avoid that August order and go back to the original order from October in a nutshell.
Anything else?
No, no, sir. That was it. I was given the roadmap and kind of just went on a blabbing spree thanks to the coffee. But
that's okay. So you still have 5 minutes, and there's some time left here, but if you don't have anything else, we can move on to the appellee.
Yes, sir. That sounds good to me, Judge. Justice, excuse me.
Whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Justices. It is my client, the appellee's position, Your Honor, that the point of focus is, was the order initially issued by the court October 2022 final? Because we know that the court's plenary power extends for 30 days after a final judgment is issued. And so, as a starting point, we have to know whether or not the initial action was final, because that's going to address the subsequent actions taken by the court. It is not unusual in any civil action, for example, for a court to issue orders during the course of the litigation. Issues may be raised to the court wherein the judge decides a matter, and oftentimes judges will do these things so as to narrow the issues that will be disposed of at the trial. Well, in this particular civil action, the pleading before the court, there were numerous causes of action, and there was an extensive trial with multiple exhibits and testimony taken in support of the case. And the trial was on October 18th, 2022, and within 3 days, the court issued an order. And the judge, in that written statement, one page, there was no language in that order that it disposed of all the issues that were brought in the case.
But that's not necessary in all final judgments. You agree with that, correct?
I would agree with that. But I think that does give us some clarity to look at as to what the intent was in drafting that document.
And you also agree, though, that there was a bench trial held on October 18th.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that after October 18th, we've heard of the 21st judgment, and then the May 2023 judgment, and then the August 2023 judgment. But anytime between then, a bench trial wasn't resumed. It was only resumed on motion from your client, correct?
Yes, correct, Your Honor.
There's a motion to reform the judgment.
Judgment was used to point towards actions taken by the court. I think what words are used only gain some authority based upon what's actually in the document.
Okay, so your underlying position is that the October 2022 order is not a final order.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the May 23 order, because of the language, it's not a final order because of the language.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the May 2023 order is a final order because of the language.
Well, in my brief, I indicated it as questionable because, as it's been noted, that the only change was the elimination of the reference to what the court thought was a particular action or pleading that was non-existent, but nonetheless issued a document, an order, disposing of a claim through a procedure, through summary judgment that didn't exist.
Who prepared that first order?
To my knowledge, the court prepared that first order.
So the court prepared both the first order and the second order.
That's correct, Your Honor. And so there is no basis for any individual, the litigants, to suggest that because it made reference to summary judgment, we can then assume that the judge would refer to something else. The judge wrote what the judge wrote.
All right, there's a presumption of finality. When a trial court renders a judgment after a conventional trial, whether it's jury or bench, there's a presumption that the judgment disposes of all issues and parties. It's called the Aldridge presumption. So these two orders have the same terminology in the basic sense, and there's a presumption that the first order is final. The object is to establish the intent of the judge in rendering the opinion. Is there any indication that the judge intended for this to be a not a final order?
Well, what we know, if we are to try and ascertain if the judge intended it to be final, the language that the judge used in that first order indicated that it was a partial summary judgment. And so if the judge, in writing and drafting its own order, indicates on its face that it didn't dispose of all the claims.
But my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that there was no summary judgment filed by either party in this case.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So doesn't it make more sense that because we get the second order, that it was just a clerical error?
No, Your Honor, because the judge in the initial order referenced the partial summary judgment that didn't exist. And in the second order, the judge simply didn't reference anything. And so how then do you conclude that somehow by eliminating some language but retaining the bulk of the original language, that somehow it creates a sense of finality? You know, typically you would expect that in an order, it is an order in regard to something specific. That is, the order grows out of a particular cause of action or claim for which the court has now delineated that decision in writing. But in this instance, what we learn about whether or not it's final is when the judge says it is partial. And so even if that were a judgment, and I don't contend that it was, it on its face says that it's partial. So that nonetheless said there's something else to.
So what you're saying is it's not the reference to partial summary judgment was not because it wasn't a mistake because nobody had filed a summary judgment, but the intent of the judge was to say that I'm only going to render judgment here on some of the matters.
I think that could be a fair interpretation. And why is that so? Because if you're suggesting that it's a clerical error, it takes some discernment to decide, do I grant the entire summary judgment or do I grant the full or a partial summary judgment? I faced in my civil practice a number of instances in dealing with summary judgments, and oftentimes judges will dismiss some claim and retain others. And then the case moves on for the disposition of the remaining claims. Well, in this instance, somebody wrote, this is partial summary judgment. Had it been a summary judgment in its totality, then that would have suggested that it's not simply an interlocutory order, that it might be then, because it disposes of potentially all of the claims, you might want to then initiate something to address that point so as to preserve your options to get some relief or to appeal the matter for a review of the decision. And so where in this instance, we have to give some fidelity to the writing, specific writing, as opposed to a sense that it was a clerical error, because there is a number of things that could have come into play in that drafting. And so
if it wasn't a clerical error, then why did the judge sua sponte just remove that portion? And then once the judge removed that portion, there was still a period of time where there was nothing else that happened until you asked that the judgment be reformed.
Well, the reform that recall when the second order was filed, it was in August.
What you're saying is that it was partial when the judge wrote partial. When she removed partial, then it's all.
Well, all of what? And so my contention is, if we don't have a finality from the first order, simply removing that particular language, if it wasn't final, then the second one, I believe and contend that it may be subject to interpretation as to whether that is final as well, because it doesn't make reference to the particular action for which it is being rendered.
So what would you consider the first order? Based on your research, what is the first order?
Well, I think it's a practical matter. The first order was kind of a nothing.
Okay.
That's not, I don't
now
know,
how,
it's a legal term.
How stable is our jurisprudence when judges sign orders that don't, that aren't considered anything? I mean, because that's how we're trying to perceive this as a nothing in order to get to the subsequent analysis. And I'm not comfortable with the idea of acting like something didn't happen. So how do we, is there any case law where an order has been deemed not to be anything?
Well, and I said, say this anything in the context that if it's not a final order, the case is still on the books, as it were. And courts can, through the course of litigation, issue orders and the case stands. And I look upon that order of October the 21st of 2022 as simply something that the case was still on the court's books.
Were you the trial counsel?
Yes, sir.
And
yes,
when you got this in 2022, did you realize, did you think, well, that, what were your impressions when you saw it? Did you?
My impression was that it was a partial summary judgment that didn't exist and that the judge hadn't issued a final decision on it.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't think it was for me necessarily to go say, hey, judge, what is this? But the case, you know, continue, and waiting on the court to either review its own actions or what have you, then to decide perhaps what, if anything, it ought to do. But typically, when courts have issued partial summary judgments, at some point they get back with the counsel and say, all right, now this is what the time frame we're going to do to dispose of and move forward. I'm kind of in that mode, waiting for the court to decide what, if anything, it wants to do. But I didn't see that initial October 2022 order as final. I mean, otherwise, I think then the court, I'm relying on the court to manage its own dockets and decide how it wants to pursue on the orders that it issues.
So I think you'd agree with me, too, that if we had the reporter's record for the bench trial, we might be in a little better position. But the question, I think the judgment that is currently being appealed that has the increased amount of damages, those increased damages, and correct me if I'm wrong, mental anguish was added?
When I read the order, it doesn't speak.
Well, when I read the briefs, my understanding was the 1,300 and change went to 3,200 and change because the motion for reformation of the judgment asked for mental anguish, maybe pain and suffering that you thought weren't part of the original judgment. So the question, and I know you'll agree with me that it would be in a much better position if those matters were tried to the court in the bench trial, and the order that we got was the $1,300 order, then we would know that those issues, mental anguish, pain, and suffering, were tried and out of the order. And I'm just trying to say, and I think you agree with me, is that without the reporter's records, They're swimming through muddy water.
I would agree, Your Honor. And if I may add, when the motion to reform was filed and it was amended several times, because it was my contention that the judge, that there were some damages, economic damages, that were not appropriately accounted for. And as a DTBA claim, the damages weren't treble. And so the question was whether or not, you know.
Well, but if they render or if they issue an order on May 20 or May 21st, 2022, and you realize that you asked for those things and the judge didn't put them in your judgment, don't you need to ask for that within 30 days?
Not if it's final. If it's not final, Your Honor, I didn't think there was a time period. I wouldn't believe there was a time period. And again, it's our contention and belief that the clock begins at the time that a final judgment is signed. And so if we don't have a final judgment, it's hard to say whether or not the 30-day time period clock begins. And I think that that's crucial. And that's why I believe one fundamental issue is whether or not that October 20, 2022 order was final.
There, Chief brought up the Reformation judgment from August 23. And I just, it's an aside. I had a question that jumped out at me about was scratched out as far as the post-judgment interest rate and written in to be 55%. Can you explain where that 55% came from? I'm somewhat familiar with the finance code and post-judgment interest rates, and I was curious how that came about.
I believe I prepared the typewritten portion of this order, but I did not fill in the blank and sort of, and the judge had crossed out an amount that though sub 5.5%.
Oh, is that 5.5?
Well,
it may be then. Okay, I've read it as 55%, so that very well could answer the question.
It does look like 55, but you might argue that there is. But the writing kind of subsumed the period in between. I don't know.
Thank you.
But 55 just seems like, wow.
Right. No, that answers my question. Thank you.
Okay. To get some resolution to this case, we have to decide and focus on whether or not the initial court decision that was issued on October the 21st of 2022 was final, and whether or not that changed, if at all, when the subsequent order was issued. We know that when the order second one in May the 8th of 2023 was issued, a request was made for reformation, and during that 75-day period authorized under the rules, the 74th day on August the 19th, 2023, the judge signed an order, which is the order granting the judgment. We think that creates a position from which an appeal could be made, because if the initial order or written by the court and was not final, then we believe that the actions taken by the court were within the court power and authority, and that the order signed by the judge reforming the judgment should stand, and we ask for that relief, Your Honor.
What type of damages did you ask for?
We asked for economic and compensatory damages. We asked for the those were the primary damages that were asked for in this case.
Okay. And mental anguish?
Yeah, that was requested.
The Because I'm looking, what I keep looking at is when we're trying to determine whether an ambiguous judgment is considered final, we look at whether it unmistakably refers to it as a final judgment, or and refers to all parties and claims, or we look at whether the judgment actually disposes of all parties, which it does, right? The judgment, any of these three, there's only the two parties, right? So it That's disposes correct. Of all parties and all claims before the court, regardless of the language. So in my mind, are there any claims that weren't addressed in the 22 order, 2022 order? What claims were not addressed? Because it awarded economic damages, but were there any claims that were not addressed in the 2022 order?
Well, yes, we believe that if the court determines that amount of economic damages, then the proper award would be to treble those damages under one of the claims set forth in the litigation. That wasn't done. I mean, the court would necessarily, in doing that, would have to first identify what the damages are, and then once that determination is made,
but we don't know. But the court could have found in your favor for the breach of contract, but not the TPA. But we don't know because we don't have final confession.
Exactly. You're correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
Counsel? Just brief rebuttal. I won't keep it too long. Just kind of taking notes as I was hearing the discussion. One of the things I would like to address, I guess, is how deleting one little phrase like partial summary judgment can lead us to assume whether error occurred or not. I think that was kind of a question that popped up in the discussion a minute ago. I think it's important because deleting that portion of partial summary judgment shows it's evidence of an error, because when we're looking at all of this, the analysis, we're supposed to look at the pleadings, and there's no motion for summary judgment filed at all on any side. And we know that the order, even the original order from October, has October 22, it says in there, the court acknowledges counsel's pleadings and arguments. So the pleadings are included. So we have to look to the pleadings, and there's no summary judgment filed in. So that's a safe assumption that that's pulling out a clerical error, because there's no partial summary judgment at all to have considered as pleadings. And I think that's important also because that leans more towards the trial court correcting the clerical error. Because if she sua sponte summary judgment, that would probably be leaning towards judicial error right there. I don't think that happened. I think the trial court was just fixing the clerical error, and then it kind of snowballs down the road. Also, the second thing I wanted to mention, kind of piggybacking off of this as well, is the I heard this tribunal ask about if there are any things considered in the new order opposed to the original order, and it doesn't appear that there's anything different considered. However, the new order is substantially different because it spells out the mental anguishes and all that stuff that we didn't see before in the first two orders. That's important because also looking at the pleadings in this case, there's no motion to sever anywhere in this case. There's no order to sever. So when we have this first order from October, and this order says having considered plaintiff's pleadings and arguments, that's evidence towards the finality right there. Because there is no severance. There's no reservation or severance of the mental anguish, or the attorney's fees, or everything else they asked for in their motion to reform. That was basically it. I wanted to just point out after that.
Did, and I know we'll never know, but did the judge make a decision at the end of the bench trial? Was there an oral rendition of her judgment?
The order was signed Offhand, I don't want to lie to you. I don't recall at this moment offhand if it was signed the same day or signed and then or heard and then signed after. I think actually, you know what? I think it Justice. I think it was Chief Justice. I think it was tried October 18th and it was signed October 21st.
Yes, I understand the judgment. The written judgment was signed at a later date, but my recollection from my time on the bench was that if you had a bench trial, you laid out the ground rules. And there might be times when you say, oh, well, I'll take it under consideration and then vote later. But many times you rule right then and there. And so I was just curious of whether there was an oral rendition of her judgment before she memorialized it.
I can't answer that. Justice.
The other counsel.
Well,
I have no objection.
There.
He's going to get the answer.
Okay.
But that's all I had as far as my rebuttal. Those 2 points I wanted to emphasize a little bit.
Okay. Any questions?
Perfect.
Okay. That case will be under submission. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Thank you, Justice.